everybody. Welcome to Pep Talks. And what a beautiful, beautiful day it is in Los Angeles today. We have a guest today. Me and Steve Lally have a guest, comedian and writer. He's written for Rodney Dangerfield, which I can't wait to talk to him about. Please welcome Howard Berger.
Hey, how you doing there?
How are you, buddy?
Oh, I'm great.
Yeah, yeah.
Nice and wet out here.
Yes, that's what I love. Like, I love when L.A. Is wet, really wet, you know, because it's always so starkly, horribly sunny. And I never realized how bad the sun really is. You know what I mean? Like, that stark white light that just every day hammers you into a submission. You know what I mean? It hammers you into all right, enough. Like, in other words, it just is so white all the time out here that you want some variation. So when clouds and rain come, you're like, oh, isn't that true?
Oh, you get to use your umbrella. You know, you finally get to use it once a year. And I get the one with the spikes, you know, the ones that don't work when you open it up and then just spikes.
Yes. Really cheap shit ones?
Yeah. Do you remember in the days in New York?
Howard is from, you're from New York?
Originally from Toronto, but I lived in New York.
We have a Canadian here.
And they would sell the umbrellas on the street in New York, and it depended on how much rain it was. That's how the price was.
That's right.
If it was really heavy rain, it would be $10.
That's right.
For sprinkles, $1.50.
All these guys popped up out of nowhere with really cheap shit umbrellas, and that is hilarious. I remember that if it was just sprinkling, they'd be $5.
And yeah, and if it was a hailstorm, it would be like $20, $25. And the great thing is that they're these, you know, they're really bad umbrellas, and they'd be like the spikes. You'd open it up. But we used it on the subway against muggers. It was fantastic. So,
they became weapons.
Yeah.
They became weapons, you know.
That's what you were paying for. That's really what. By the way, ladies and gentlemen, if you're not in L.A., this is not rain. What we're getting today
is true.
It's like a beautiful, misty, overcast day.
It's like it's a cold. Yes album cover. Do you remember the band Yes?
Oh, yeah.
In and around the lake.
Jeez.
Mountains come out of the sky, and they stand now.
And yes. We planned to do that because, Eddie, we needed some singing. We haven't had singing on the show in a while, and I wanted to hear that.
We haven't. But, yeah, that is a funny memory about New York. Did you live in New York, Steve?
No. I only visited New York once before I moved to L.A. And I was there in the summer, and I took the subway, and I would blow my nose after going in the subway, and it was charcoal black.
Was it really?
Yeah, and I went, you know, I think I'm going to move to L.A. But also, I had to bark at people on the street to come get them to come see my shows. I had to pay a guy.
In New York?
Yeah, I had to pay a guy $20 for him to come to stand up New York to see me do stand-up. I go, you know what? I'm not going to live through the winter here. I'm going to move to L.A. That was sealed.
Maybe that's why we have so many people here. Now, I did not give a shit about the weather in New York. I liked it, more or less. I've never liked the heat, so I made a mistake coming here. But it was just the way to go for me. Like, my career just led me here. And L.A. is intoxicating when you first come here, is it not? Like, it's intoxicating.
Especially Hollywood. The energy in Hollywood?
No, it's not the energy.
What is it?
It's the wet. At first, the weather's, like, amazing.
Yeah, every day it's nice. It's just, yeah.
Oh, so you like, are you on the west side, Howard?
In the middle, near the Beverly Center. Just in the
middle. That's near the way. I love the Beverly Center. And the Beverly Center, for those of you who aren't just a it's a big mall. And
you didn't hear what happened with the Beverly Center. They got rid of the food court.
What?
They no longer have the food court. So I went into the Beverly Center to get something to eat, and I spent 4 days looking for the food court. And they said, sir, they got rid of the food court. They just put more like fancy
restaurants.
And I was going, where's it? And I went to the 8th floor, 7th, 6th. I went to the garage. I was looking. And they got rid of, I mean.
That I'm a fan of food courts.
No, but you got.
but what that's about is like they're saying, fuck you to the average schmuck who doesn't have money. And like, yeah, we instead of having, you know, available cuisine that, you know, you will go out of your system in a minute and a half. We now you have to go into a restaurant and spend money, baby.
Well, now there's no diner. Before I came to this show, I went to this diner. I found there's a diner, Lancers. It's very good.
And Lancers, I know that. Where is
and
that?
And it's just on Victory and there's no diners anymore.
Hate that.
And I was thinking if. The folk singers would be singing today. They'd be singing, "Where have all the diners gone?"
That's true.
It's terrible.
Are there diners in New York? Do you remember in New York?
There's still diners in New York.
There are.
Yeah.
Okay, because then there were these like hip diners. And do you remember the Empire?
Of course, on 9th.
Is that still there?
It's on, I think, 9th Avenue, 23rd.
It's 9th and 20th, exactly.
I know my
10th. I think it's 10th and 23rd.
10th and 23rd.
But yeah, the Empire. And you don't know New York, but the Empire Diner was, I think it was sort of like, it had the look of a subway car, but really done up and very black. And it would just like be all these fucking club kids at night. Everybody coming from clubs high on.
Oh, yeah, we always did that after the comedy club. And Billy Joel actually has a line in one of his songs. He mentions the Empire.
Does he?
Yeah.
Was that...
Great Wall of China.
Oh.
On one of the...
You'd think it would be on in New York State of Mind.
Yeah.
I'm in a New York State of Mind. Ooh. Some folks like to get away. Take a holiday from the neighborhood. Hop a flight to Miami Beach or
Hollywood.
But I ain't.
I'm taking an Uber instead of a Greyhound. Nobody's taking the Greyhound. They got to get rid of those lyrics.
Maybe we shouldn't sing like that because it reminded me just for a second karaoke, and I hate karaoke.
Oh, I was thinking you were going to say, but rights, we could get sued for singing Billy Joel.
I don't think so.
Billy Joel on our podcast. They might try to take some of our money.
Oh, really? Our money? Good luck with that. If you're coming after our money,
go see Matt Rossimoto, our producer. He's got all the money.
No, if you're coming after our money, I need you to tell me where it is. All right, Howard, let's ask you a question right off the bat. We got a couple of emails this week. One of them was, and they were, you were a little privy. We read them to you. I don't think we're going to read them on the air, but we could talk about them. They were, one of them was so scathing. It was when Steve had written me something about millennials. And I asked Steve to read it, and he did. And we got such a scathing email about us attacking millennials that millennials are living through the great collapse. And yes, I agree with that. Because I talk about I think I've talked about a lot. I say the great collapse is coming, and the writer of this email, Neil, I believe his name was, he was like, "Hey, fuck face," something. That was the tone of it. After calling us wankers and fuck faces, the whole email he goes, "All right, look, maybe that was a little harsh."
right out of anger.
No, but I really like this guy, Neil. I really, if you're watching, listening, or whatever, I really liked it, man, because we said after we read this that, holy shit, if people are passionate like this,
millennials will be fine. If they're all like this guy.
But he attacks the millennials, Neil, by the way, Steve, not me. I don't really. I just feel like people are asleep in general. And oh, by the way, yeah, he called me and Steve, by the way. Howard, sorry you weren't part of this.
That's all right.
I have a big political left-wing streak. I just feel like, so does Steve. I just feel like. They're just, like you just talked about the food court being replaced by expensive rent. They're fucking everybody. Rents? Do you rent here or do you?
Oh, no, I rent. Yeah.
Isn't it like, I don't know where you are, but they keep raising they just keep pricing everybody out of everything, And it's sad. It's sad and so greedy. And I just the ecosystem fucking dying. So anyway, I'm always like, there's a great collapse coming, folks. And Neil, this gentleman, was saying that, "Hey, fucktard." He didn't use those words, but he was like, "Dipshits, whatever. we're in the great collapse. But, you know, and there are people living that collapse. There are. I mean, by the way, I totally recommend everybody seeing Michael Moore's 11-9. I just watched that movie and it was so fucking good. And someone was telling me they must have buried that movie. There were no major releases, no, of course, on Netflix. And now it's on Amazon Prime, which, but Netflix didn't fucking release it. You know, God forbid. They really called the Democratic Party after the war. But anyway, Neil called us, and this was one of the most scathing lines, tourists to poverty. And that we grew up, you know, able to inherit our parents' house. I have not inherited shit.
I don't know what Neil's talking about. I mean, I don't agree with anything Neil said, but I...
Anything?
Well, 90% of it was... He doesn't know what he's... Well, he doesn't know us. I mean, he doesn't know lived through. I certainly...
I worked horrible jobs. By the way, Neil was talking about, well, how many hours do you fucking work? And you know what? I have dedicated my life to not working horrible jobs because I worked them for so many years, like sanding floors.
Oh, yeah, sanding floors.
I sanded floors in Staten Island. Could you sand it and installed them? In the winter, even. Oh, like, I would go into empty houses and my boss and another worker, and we would go in and we would install hardwood fucking flooring in the winter.
How long did
and
you
then
how
sand long? Them. How and long? I still have tinnitus. So, you know, I've been through the rigors of the working class. And yes, I got into comedy because I didn't want to do, I mean, well, first of all, I'm gifted. And Neil, you must see that. I'm gifted. I love the little muse, the little dancing gypsy in my head. No, but I mean, comedy was always what I wanted to do, you know?
How long did you sand floors for? How many years did you
per have? House? We'd usually a couple hours each house. No, I did that shit for maybe 4 or 5 years. Got an incredibly big hernia out of it, which is like the gold watch of floor sanding.
Yeah, Neil's right in the sense that I didn't hold a job for more than 2 years at a time, but I would get another job until I couldn't do comedy. I wouldn't be able to keep a job because I'd be up at night doing stand-up, and I'd show up to the job late or I'd show up half-assed and they would fire me. So,
you know,
when he's saying tourist poverty, I don't want to engage it too much because it's a pedantic conversation, but it's all relative. I mean, it was the life you have is the life that you have. I mean, we didn't have money and property to inherit.
His main point was that me and you do not fucking know what's going on. We don't know.
Well, then why is he listening to us?
Because he knows that our heart's in the right place, but I guess attacking it really. But anyway, I love the email because it was so fucking passionate, you know. And I'm self-loathing, so anybody who tells me I'm a piece of shit, I'm like, thank you for that valid. Thank you for saying what I already know. You know what I mean? But yeah, so we don't know. What do you think about that comment that we don't really know what the fuck the hardships that are there? I mean, they are. I mean, they are living without much opportunity.
I certainly don't know what Neil's – I don't know Neil.
Right.
I don't know what he's going through, but I like his attitude. And I think if he has that attitude, whether he's right or wrong, the attitude is the important thing. He's got fight. Yeah. In him, because my what triggered that me to send you that email?
He does have fight in
which
him.
That email I sent you was not meant for public consumption. It was just sent to you, and right. I don't know why I chose you to send it to. But but it was triggered by the fact that I walk around looking at people who are, I guess, a generation younger than me, as if they're robotic and they have no full range of human emotion. That's what's bothering me is the fact that how disconnected they are from. You know, from a rage and sorrow. I mean, they just seem like C-3PO. All of them, just a fucking parade of C-3POs. That's why I wrote that. So,
what is the generation called that is very young now? Like in the movie 11-9, what was amazing were these kids from Parkland, that school that got shot up, and they really created a movement. And they were young, man. They were teenagers kicking ass. And I was like, holy shit, where are more of these guys? You know, like, wow, you know, it was awesome. But anyway, Yeah, so that was the crux of that email that, you know, it, yeah, and I understand that too, like you know, like having a podcast and talking about what people are, you don't really know what the fuck is going on out there in a real gritty session, in a real gritty fashion, you know, in the real context. And I should maybe we should go
Bukowski, by the way, who we supposedly fantasize about.
I'm not a big Bukowski fan.
But I am. But yeah. Bukowski lived a middle class.
I like Bukowski, huh?
He lived a middle
class. Sounds like a Russian hockey player on the Washington Capitals. It's just over to Bukowski.
Yeah. Well, Bora.
Nikolai Borakowski.
Yeah.
So I don't know hockey enough, guys.
Yeah. But what were you going to say?
No, he lived a middle class. He grew up in Pasadena.
Oh, he did.
He had a middle class upbringing. Mm-hmm. They weren't rich, but they couldn't afford the good food. I mean, if you read Bukowski, you really get to know what he went through. They were poor people who were trying to be middle class, mm-hmm. like the father was trying. But he always had a home to go back to. So maybe he was a tourist of poverty. Maybe we're all in the same. Do you know what I'm saying? Mm-mm. You know what I'm saying?
What I loved. Also, Neil was like. What the fuck? It was about Dylan just not really being
authentic.
You know, he writing all these songs about freight train hopping, and meanwhile, he's—I think he called him lower middle class, which is kind of what I was lower middle.
Poor
class.
People who think they're middle class.
Dylan was middle class, wasn't he?
Or? Yeah,
probably.
Yeah.
Hibbing, Minnesota.
Yeah,
I'll tell you, I'm a little pissed at Dylan doing commercials like. You know, did you see any of the Super Bowl ads? Why is Steve Carell? This still irks me.
He did Budweiser. Didn't Dylan do the GM?
No, Budweiser. It was
blowing in the wind. Was there another ad that he did?
Yeah, he did a GM. And I remember I had a joke saying, you know, his lyrics are going to be the tires that they're going to need a change.
Yeah, I was similar. I said, boy, the times are changing.
The tires are going to be, yeah.
On Twitter, I was like, the times are changing, Bob. Get out of the way, buddy.
Yeah, he did the, I think
I don't know what he's doing.
He's telling you it's over by doing the
maybe,
commercial.
Maybe. I mean, yeah. And I have a couple of friends who are fucking huge Bob Dylan fans. And they are like, they will defend him to the death. Like, one of my friends is like, no, man. Dylan is fucking with everybody. Like, they won't believe that he's...
I got to perform at Gertie's Folk City in the Village. That's where Dylan started.
Oh, really? What year?
81. And you know who I did? I did it with Frank Conniff.
Oh!
Because that's I started with Frank.
I love Frank Conniff. And Sirius XM, you fucked up. With Frank Conniff, go ahead.
And one time he said, come on, we'll go down. We'll do an open mic at Gertie's Folk City. They had it on, and I said, we got to go on that. That's where Dylan started. And it was, you know, that's like.
I love Frank. He has lines like, this is a Frank Conniff line. Oh, boy, Silver Lake. Silver Lake has a gelato-based economy.
Very funny guy.
Very funny guy.
So that was exciting in the Village back then.
Yeah, to be in. I performed one of my first shows I ever did in New York was at the Bitter End.
Yeah, we did it. They used to have comedy with Danny Vitale on Tuesday nights.
Maybe that's the show I did.
That was the show.
Danny Vitale. Howard is bringing back names. He's still around,
yeah,
Danny
Vitale. I still communicate with him on Facebook. And
I'll never forget.
One of the funniest guys.
Yeah. I like Danny Vitale because he's a big self-sabotager too, right?
He was on Saturday Night Live.
For a heartbeat, right?
Yeah. One of the funniest
guys. One of the funniest guys because I saw this guy, Danny Vitale, who is still around. And he doesn't know me, I'm sure. But I saw him in Catch a Rising Star back in the day. And he was so fucking funny. And he was talking about being on HBO had a comedy special that they ran a bunch called New Faces or something. And he's like, he was on New Faces. Yeah, New Faces. I got veins coming out of my fucking, you know. Like, shit, I just really connected with
that guy. Yeah, he ran the show every Tuesday. It was the Bitter End. For 1 year, they called it the Other End, and then they
I think I remember that.
And then they switched it back to the Bitter End. And you know what the Bitter End is? That's where Woody started in 62.
Woody Guthrie?
No, Woody Allen. That was
Oh, shit!
And Neil Diamond got his first paid gig there. So those are the
at the
two.
Bitter End?
Yeah, at the Bitter
yeah,
End.
Yeah, I knew when I was there, I was, and it's still there,
it's
I
still
think,
there.
On Bleecker.
But there's no comedy there. It's just...
Oh, there's no comedy there.
No.
I'm kidding. But is it, what kind of music? It's not still folk,
yeah,
is
I
it?
Think it? I think it's original, you know, rock, if there is rock anymore. Mm-hmm. Is there any, no, there's no more rock.
You're asking the wrong guy. I don't know.
I used to be into heavy metal. Now I'm into light aluminum. You know, just.
I'm into light aluminum. Yeah. I remember when there were aluminum bats in baseball. You remember that shit?
Yeah.
In professional baseball?
Did it ever make the pros? I think for maybe a season.
No.
Yeah. Or half. Yeah, season.
It did?
Right?
Yeah,
do you remember that? I remember they used aluminum bats for maybe one season.
When? When? Give me
I don't know the fucking year.
Do you?
I know with hockey sticks they went from wood to aluminum, you know.
Do they still?
Yeah. No, I don't think nobody's using wood anymore.
Right now?
I don't think so.
No, they break all the time. They must be using wood. Aluminum wouldn't break, right?
No.
They're talking about going to aluminum foil hockey sticks. We just foil. Yeah, so I love the talk about just I love the history of comedy, and also just getting back to Neil's email. So thanks for that email. It was good. It was good. You do have a bunch of things wrong about us, and we don't know much about you. But I get the point too. And he said, it's a wake up call, and I got that. I got that. Like.
It's good to have discourse, too. I mean, this is discourse. We're supposed to have it. You know, we champion it. We're always saying we need discourse. We need everybody's in their own echo chamber. So that's what his email is. It's discourse, and we can talk about it. He can email us back. Mm-hmm. And then we got the other email from... From what? Our UFO guy.
Oh, yeah. This was a good one. Yeah. This was another good one. This was from... This is from Tim, and this was great, and it goes, there aren't so much corrections to points you made in your latest podcast as there are exceptions. So he says, first off, nothing lampooning the U.S. I was saying there isn't really – the movies we were talking about don't really lampoon the U.S. culture, and he said, au contraire, he was like, check out – Sorry to Bother You, which I have not seen.
It's supposed to be great. I haven't seen it either, but every friend who's seen it says it's great.
About telemarketers.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, good. I got to see. That's the first thing I'm going to watch. And then Black Klansman, and I did like Black Klansman a lot.
And Get Out was also great. Have you seen that, Eddie? Have you guys seen Get Out?
I haven't seen Get Out.
Yeah, that was amazing.
Oh, great. Yeah, Jordan Peele,
yeah.
Stan and Ollie was very good.
I loved Stan and Ollie.
It was an unbelievable movie.
Right. It was a great movie. It didn't lampoon U.S. culture, but it was a great movie.
Right. But we don't have... I guess our point was there are not as many as there were.
That's for sure. And I want to say, Sorry to Bother You, though, sounds like the type of movie I would love to
see. We should see that.
Vice was also good. And then he also said this, which was very interesting, because I was pointing out that... when you use military equipment in a movie, the Pentagon has to approve the script. Could you imagine? You know how it's bad enough that studio heads like get involved in scripts, but you see General Franklin like looking it over, going, "Where the fuck is the Ark in Act Two? There's no character act. I don't believe these characters." I don't believe a goddamn word she's saying, because in a relationship, if you're not given a Valentine's gift, you're fucking pissed off. I almost had my balls stuffed down my throat by my wife. This is General Franklin. By the way, it is Valentine's Day tomorrow. Any special plans, gentlemen?
How?
The way you looked at
it. He's the man.
The way you.
I figured it.
He deferred to me because I'm single and he's single. Fucking married.
Oh, you're married!
He's got no Valentine.
So funny.
You're doing something, I hope.
Oh, absolutely.
What are you doing? What are you guys doing?
We're going... actually, my mother's in town from Canada, so from Toronto, so everybody's going to...
It's his birthday, by the way. It was his birthday 2 days ago.
Two days ago.
Happy birthday, buddy. Oh, that's great.
I got a funny. It's funny. It popped up on Facebook. 3 years ago, I went to a jazz club, and Don Rickles was there on my birthday. And I said, Don,
I said, Don,
it's my birthday. He goes, well, what do you want me to do? Send a rocket in the air? Who cares? It's just, you know, he's so funny.
I love that. He's a
wonderful guy.
He was a wonderful Mr. guy. Wonderful.
Mr. Wonderful. He was a wonderful.
I used to love the music he would come on to.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking? It was like
dun, dun.
Da, 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 like bullfighter music. I forget what it was.
Really?
Bum, 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 bum. Yeah, it was the pomp was so overdone. It was hilarious, you know. Me and my wife, for Valentine's Day, me and my wife, we're just going to go. It's a tradition we do every Valentine's Day. We go zip lining in the Brazilian forest. Now, most of the Amazon has been cut down.
They go zip lining on Amazon, not in.
Oh, we go zip lining on Amazon. Yeah. No, you know what we do? We actually celebrated before, and I've already taken her out to dinner, and I got a couple of gifts that I got to wrap, but we celebrated before because you can't go out to dinner on fucking Valentine's Day because everybody is doing that shit. So we do it like the week of, do it before Valentine's Day.
Man, this is fucked up to say, but.
What are you doing, Valentine's Day?
I'm so relieved that I don't have any.
I hear you.
It's one less thing to think about. There was a girl who did have a little thing with me, and we were going to do, but then she stopped talking to me. So
that's so funny. That is just a great way to talk about, look, I was going to do something with somebody who had a little thing for me, but then she stopped talking to me. So I'm free again for Valentine's.
Maybe that should bring us to our first ad.
Yeah, we do have to get to some ads. These are written by our illustrious producer, Matt Rossomoto.
Who's in the studio
He's
with us today.
He's in the studio with us
Very
today.
Very rare appearance.
And look at this. It goes right into it. This is from Love Apathy, and they've been a great spot. Why don't you read this one,
Oh,
Steve?
I'm so excited. And what a great segue for a Valentine's Day gift.
It's
the
amazing.
Valentine's Day. This Valentine's Day, ladies and gentlemen, give yourself the gift of love with the only dating app built for realists. The good folks at Love Apathy have used advanced super science based their super science-based machine learning and artificial intelligence to unlock the secret behind marriages that lasts the test of time. And now, all that data is available for you, so you can hopefully get a pity sex style one-night stand with a stranger who has seemingly lost all a semblance of hope, and yet is willing to continue looking deep into the emotionless abyss of long-term commitment. That sweet spot between hopelessness and faith, that's called true love. Download the Love Apathy app on your mobile device today, and by Valentine's Day night, you'll find yourself snuggled in the Venn diagram of love with someone who is absolutely indifferent to your feelings and mutually trapped between physical closing time and a complete loss of self-respect. Because eventually, we all need someone to WebMD that welt on our collective circumcision scar. Who won't judge us or ask too many questions? Isn't that what love is? Love Apathy, the love app for realists.
Wow. That was really good.
Beautiful. And what makes Love Apathy great, and thanks, Matt Rossomoto, for writing these real ads, what makes Love Apathy great is that they don't pull punches, you know? We live, and this is a problem, and I shouldn't say millennials. It's definitely not millennials. It's every fucking body. We live in a fantasy world. We live in a fantasy world. And Hollywood is so complicit in this fantasy world of like, oh, you know, romance, you know, the storybook romance shit. You know, oh, it's all going to be great, you know. They even romanticize cancer the way they did in Love Story, you know. It looked great to get cancer from that movie, you know what I mean?
They have a movie every year, every year about a dying teenage girl who just wants a boyfriend. I mean, that's a theatrical release. You're laughing, but those are movies that get theatrical release and millions of dollars.
A dying teenage girl who wants a boyfriend, yeah. Oh,
I
man.
Wish I was making that up.
I know. These are tough times.
It's bad.
Holy fuck. But Love Apathy, what I love about them is they don't like feed that, you know, Hollywood bullshit.
My life and my success in relationships is all because of love apathy. My love apathy app helped me keep from getting laid after the accident. My love apathy app helped that girl get totally disconnect with me. It's been.
Hey, did we finish Tim? So here's what he said about. So the U.S. military. This is Tim's email. The U.S. military, the Pentagon, has to approve the scripts. But he said the U.S. military actually severed ties with Marvel. He said I watch the Marvel movies. My wife is a big comic book person. So, and he points out that the U.S. military actually severed ties with Marvel during the first Avengers film because they didn't like how they were being depicted. And I don't know if those ties were ever mended, as the plot of Captain America, Winter Soldier has a U.S. intelligence/military agency declare Captain America a terrorist because he discovers a plot by them to murder millions of American citizens after using behavioral algorithms to preemptively declare them terrorists. So, yeah. But the one thing I was reading, there's a new Peter Jackson movie out about World War One, and my man, who I talk about all the time, Chris Hedges, talked about how it's a cartoon movie because these, you know, and I think Marvel has to fall into this category for me too, is they depict war as just, you know, kind of a fact, you know, there's no reality in it. Like, there's no reality of the incredible fucking degradation, suffering.
Horror.
Yeah, just incredible horror. And, you know, Peter Jackson, I think the Lord of the Rings guy did, I forget what the name of this World War One movie is, but he said it's just a fucking bullshit movie again, not showing that war is a fucking horrific, horrific thing. And I think the Marvel movies, you know, even though I get what Tim is saying here, kind of does that, you know, like, look at all that action, you know.
Well, it's wrapped up in fantasy when it's Marvel or Transformers. Or, and they got the Mountain Dew ads. So you got the Mountain Dew, the pimping the Mountain Dew.
Do they?
Oh, yeah. You got all the
product placement
for the big corporate, you know, you got all that. So
the only thing I like product placement in is wedding videos, like when you... That I enjoy, you know, like me and my wife just had a big, in our wedding video, we just had a big thing of a big canister of Roundup, the Monsanto pesticide in the middle of. What happened to Monsanto? You were talking about
that. Oh, you know what? I don't think that's real news, man. What I saw, I mean, I hate to say it.
Oh, it's bullshit?
It's bullshit. I mean, for what I could see, I searched it on Google.
Oh.
And it's.
So who put it out?
It was something that was, you know, I'm glad I didn't retweet it. I'm glad because it was a suspicious.
Yeah.
It wasn't like a mainstream news site, and so I didn't eat, like our friend said, I'm too tired and I just don't have the patience.
Well, this is what I was going to say. I'm going to finish with Tim's email. He goes, now to UFO abductions. I've heard, but I'm too tired to verify that most people claiming alien abduction are alcoholics, and that quote-unquote bright lights and quote-unquote passing out and fuzzy memories of non-consensual medical procedures could be someone interpreting the faint memories of a blackout after the fact. And I you know, our producer, Matt, who drinks a lot, he was like, I disagree. He didn't agree.
Heavy drinker, by the way.
So, and then he says I should check out the Chapo Trap House. I did check it out a little bit, and it was okay. I have to check out more. I should be a guest on them. Yeah, well, I'm waiting for them to call me. They have a big following.
Really?
We're developing a following. But Howard, tell us about writing for Rodney Dangerfield.
Oh, that was so when I moved to New York from Toronto, I took this comedy workshop.
With who?
Dick Lord.
Okay.
He was Bobby Darin's opening, very close.
I remember Dick. Howard's going to bring up a lot of, and this is great, just a lot of
old school names.
Old school comics, man. Catskills. Would you call them Catskill comics?
Yeah, me and Charlie Chaplin, we did the open mic down in the Village. And
he didn't go over very well.
It took him a while.
No, man. Yeah, and then they invented the microphone, and it was
you did open mic silent. That would be funny. Silent open mic.
That would be funny, right? Charlie Chaplin doing the open mic silent circuit, right?
The sunny open mic silent circuit. All right, kid, you got You got 5 minutes? Do just no fucking sound at all, baby. Tell a story with the beginning, middle, and end silently.
Anyway, so I took this comedy workshop because I came from Toronto. I had to leave. You know how people leave their country for political? I had to leave because the Leafs were terrible. You know, I couldn't stand my team. And I just...
made a big mistake coming to New York.
The guy at Customs goes, why are you coming to the United States? Says, just to get away from the Toronto Maple. I can't take it anymore. They're never going to... So anyways, I took this workshop and I got up and I started writing for him, this Dick Lord. And he said, you're a very good joke writer. Why don't you let me call Rodney? So he says, go to Dangerfields. And, I met him there. And what he does is you write the jokes on an envelope and you give it to him. Yeah. And he looks at him, and then he goes to Catch a Rising Star.
And tries him.
With a clipboard. And the one night I was there, he was doing, and he sits and he goes, he'll stand there with the clipboard, and he'll do the, and the joke, one of the first jokes I gave him was, my father never liked me when I was a kid. When he took me hunting, he tied me to the fender and put the deer in the car.
That's good.
So so he's up at Catch with the clipboard, and then, nope. So when it came to my joke, it got a laugh. So, he checks it off. And then he sends you a check for $50.
Wow. Even though that makes me, I kind of don't like the fact that comics have writers, like some comics have writers. No, it's just because when you're watching Rodney, right?
He wrote most of his stuff.
He did. Okay,
He wrote about 90%
of his stuff. Oh, great. That's cool. 90. But that's good. That's good.
But it was different. It was like when the Beatles came in, then everybody started writing their own stuff. Because before that, everybody had writers like, the Gershwins, Sinatra's, Tony Bennett. So as soon as when the Beatles came in, that was it. Everybody started writing their own stuff. So all the writers were. So it's similar to that. And that's the same thing with. But Rodney wrote probably 95% of
that.
Oh,
that's cool. Because I went on a Rodney Dangerfield binge on YouTube the other day.
He's unbelievable.
Yeah, it's amazing. You like just fucking watch.
Yeah, Cat never needed writers. Cat hired us.
Who are we talking about?
Cat Williams.
They don't know what you're talking about.
Cat Williams, who I wrote for, he hired writers. But he never used anything we wrote for him.
Is that right?
Absolutely. He just wanted to pay us and help his friends and people he thought were funny.
Oh, that's very nice.
But he did have us punch up scripts and do other things, write sketches and for him and stuff. But we never. He never used any joke.
Right.
The closest I came to getting him a joke was getting the vaporizer. I interacted with him on this level, and then he used that bit in his comedy. Mm-hmm, my white friends introduced me to the vaporizer, and that was me. But I never.
Introduced me to the vaporizer is a funny line.
Right.
But I think what happened, like when Brenner started, that's when everybody started doing their own material. Probably Robert Klein.
I love Robert Klein.
Oh, there's the best, And Robert Klein was hanging out with Rodney. Is that right? Yeah, they were best friends at the Improv.
I didn't know that.
Tell him about Lenny Bruce and Rodney and the...
Joe Ansis from Lenny Bruce. Joe Ansis was Lenny Bruce's best friend. And Lenny got all the stuff from Joe, but Joe...
Let me talk to these people for a second. You fucking idiots. I know what you're thinking. Who are these people? You. God damn. Don't make me have Neil write you an email. All right? You better know these fucking names, okay? Because I got a guy who will write you an email that will make you feel like a piece of shit. And then at the end, it goes, sorry.
I was in an emotional state.
Oh, that's funny.
So Joe Ansis, Lenny Bruce. You should know these people is what I'm saying. Go ahead. Joe Ansis.
No. So he was Lenny Bruce's best friend. They hung out together in Brooklyn.
Right.
And Lenny got a lot of his ideas from Joe. Joe just never wanted to do stand-up. And he would hang out and, everything.
But. Well, one thing I definitely know is true, being a comic, is that you have to be hanging around with other comics, to riff up jokes and to get jokes. I mean, it's so hard when I am, and I think this goes for most comics, you tell me, where you're sitting and trying to come up with shit that's funny. It just is one of the most painful But when you're hanging with your buddies,
yeah,
comedian buddies, and you're fucking throwing things back and forth, that's how I get shit.
Well, they don't have to be comedians for me. I have friends like
Sunil. Funny dentists are good.
Yeah, funny.
Funny.
Insurance salesmen. Insurance.
Some guys are funnier than, you know, they're just hysterical, but they never became comics. You know, they're just hysterical.
Well, they were the smart ones. Look at us. We're broken people. Look at us. You don't. You think this is easy? It is, in a way. And then it's horrible in another way. I mean, you know what's wild about the economy now? Like, everybody calls it a gig economy now, and that nobody has job security anymore. And I'm like, welcome to the fucking club. I mean, that's the life of a comic.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, unless you hit it really big. Rodney, what I really liked and what was inspiring about Rodney was he made it later in life. Right?
Oh, yeah. The first time I met him, mm-hmm. he came up, he said to me, "Do your parents approve of you doing this?" Just like typical Jewish, right?
Was he being serious?
Yeah, he was serious.
How old were you back then?
25.
Oh, okay.
But isn't
that's
that
funny? I mean,
that,
yeah.
You know, you
that's
think.
That's so.
Do your parents approve of you doing this? Go back into the garment business. And that's right.
Howard, could you tell Eddie the Kinnison story?
At Dangerfields. Rodney always loved the youth. You know, he was always promoting other comics. He was
me
one of,
too.
But he was amazing. So, Kinnison came to Dangerfields for the first time, and they put him on, mm-hmm. and the whole audience walked out.
The whole audience.
And wow. And then like 6 months later, he brought him back for that special.
Oh.
And he became famous from that. But I was
Did
there.
Did Rodney launch Kinnison in a way?
I think he saw him at the Comedy Store.
Right, he would play at the Comedy Store.
I think he saw. But I remember the night everybody got up and the whole, you know, and then people
250 people.
Then they left and he couldn't believe that he was coming back for that, you know, that famous special. The first Rodney special.
What do you call him again?
Young Comedians.
The Young Comedians.
HBO.
Oh.
And he
Oh, that's what Dan Vitale was talking about.
Yeah, and he was on the first one, and then he became, and that was it. And that, you know, the thing with the sand was a classic. You know,
imagine 250 people get up and then you're in that club again?
Because they didn't relate to him, I guess. And there was something.
Well, that
was the beginning of the show. Yeah, that was just before Dice, I think. Yeah, he was the first. Dice was the next year, I think.
Is that right?
For the next special, I think.
It's when comedy changed from like one-liners to like
it got edgier.
Edgier, and it was more about what you're feeling, you know, and going through, which is what I do.
It's true.
Yeah, it's true what you do.
That is true.
I just am like, I get on that stage.
Oh, I saw you at the Comedy Store. It's just...
You did.
I was unbelievable, and you
really was it good?
No, because what amazes me, everything is no like.
He said he did the bit. Do you remember? You don't even remember the material you do. He did the bit about he goes. My wife, I have terrible road rage, but my wife is worse, and my wife gave a car full of people the finger. I said, honey.
Yeah.
If you're going to give the finger, give it to the elderly. I mean, people older than we are.
Yeah.
And you just get up there and that's.
I do when it's, when I'm feeling good, you know. Yeah. Thank you.
You're like a jazz musician. You go up and solo.
I kind of like to do that. As a matter of fact, I'm freaking out about this special that I'm taping this Saturday. By the way, I'm taping a special. It's almost sold out, both shows, which is
That's fun.
It's a testament to me. Fucking. What do you want? But I freak out at specials. Taping it this Saturday, February 16th at the Dynasty Typewriter Hayworth Theater here in L.A. Shows 8 and 10 o'clock because I feel like I have to have more structure to it because it's being filmed and taped, and that makes me a little crazy because that's not my style, you know. But I think I know what to do. I just have things, you know, that I can go into and I'll just fucking play. You know, the crowd should be really good, you know. and it should be fun. But yeah, jazz musician. Wasn't Lenny Bruce kind of?
Yeah, he was into the jazz.
Well, he was. Was he a musician, a drummer? I thought I remember something like that.
I don't think so.
No?
He did play the Village Vanguard with a trio.
Oh, there you go.
So they in those days, they would have like a trio.
He
would never do like a show with comics. He would have like a jazz trio. Then he would go on and do like an hour.
They say you're funny if you make the band laugh. Yeah, like that's an old comedy saying.
That's an old comedy.
And yeah. And he started kind of being an MC at stripper clubs, right?
Right.
That kind of thing.
And I think Hefner gave him his first gig. Hugh Hefner, something like that.
Yeah.
Discovered him and put
Hugh
him in.
Hugh Hefner.
Yeah. Gave him, produced him. But
Hefner was a funny man. I'm kidding. I have no idea. Anyway, yeah, so I just loved the old New York. By the way, Village Vanguard Jazz Club.
That was my first place I went when I went to New York for the first time.
Is it gone?
It's still there.
I love that. I got to go back because it's a great club.
1935
it started. It's such a great club because it's so intimate. The ceilings are low.
And that's the thing about those clubs in New York, where you have to go down the steps.
Yes.
That's why the Comedy Cellar, right?
So the Village Comedy Cellar is great for comedy, too. I mean, you know.
You got to go down the steps.
You got to go down the steps.
You have to go down the steps and feel that pain, right?
And feel the pain. And don't worry, if you have bad wheels, there's ramps. All right, well, now this is time. By the way, folks, we did not, after a tremendous week last week of getting calls, we didn't get any calls from anybody. And last week we had a slew of great calls. And this week, nada. So if you guys have a comment for the show, call the number 424-262-0904. 424-262-0904. Last week, we even had a call from a marsupial who wasn't capable of empathy, and we're going to try to have him back since I know the guy who, the marsupial who did that call. So call in. We had nothing this week. We have another ad or two to read, and I'll read this one. This is, here we go. Laffy Taffy. Wonka, the makers of Laffy Taffy, and I really appreciate this sponsor. You know, they're just good. They're good. Good people, and their offices are just great. Their offices are beautiful. They it's a true corporate office, hip corporate office, faux hip corporate office, where the dogs have bandanas. There's ping pong tables. There's a great refrigerator.
Oh, the latte. They have the latte station.
They have a latte station, yet they're doing stuff for ExxonMobil. Okay, here it is. And we'd like to thank Matt Rasamoto, who is here today with his dog, Simon. And what a great, great dog Simon is. We'll post a picture of him with this podcast later. Wonka, the makers of Laffy Taffy, bring you the world's most delicious Band-Aids. Now, isn't that great, folks? Let's face it, kids love to bleed. It's true. They are always falling off things and jumping into ceiling fans. Kids also love sweets, and sometimes type 2 diabetes needs a little push. Now with Wonka Band-Aids, when little Timmy does the bird box challenge with the lawnmower, he'll be able to literally lick his wounds and love it. Now, let me tell you something. First of all, this is such a great company that they're on top of things that are going on in our culture, like the bird box challenge. Do you know anything about the bird box?
Relevant. Culturally.
Well, the Bird Box Challenge, you know, it's a movie, the Bird Box, about people who are blindfolded.
Yeah. Right.
Right? And so the Bird Box Challenge is you're trying to do things with a blindfold on, and it's just a terrific company. So let's keep going. So when they'll be able to literally lick his wounds and love it. When little Mackenzie gets her first period, Wonka will be there. I don't know anything about girl stuff, but I'm pretty sure you can fix anything with enough fruit-flavored Band-Aids. It sounds like science to me. Wonka Band-Aids come in flavors kids love, like clotted cherry, hemo strawberry, wounded watermelon, arrhythmic orange, weeping pustule berry, gangrenous grape. We all know children spend most of their time trying to prove Darwin wrong. So buy some Band-Aids already, you clumsy idiots.
Thank you. And I want to say we rehearse these commercials, which are all written by Matt Rossimoto, our producer, but the real ads, and we always read over them. And I read that ad in the rehearsal, and I read it so poorly that Eddie was the one who delivered it to you, and I think he did a fine job of going through those pustules.
Thank you. Matt, do we have the rest of the Chatsworth ad?
Yes, should all be there.
It's a work in progress, folks. The whole podcast.
Okay, what I have, let's see. Let me, maybe I have to go. Sorry, folks. We are, anyway.
Sometimes we do this stuff on the fly. Here he comes. This is Matt Rossimoto, our producer.
Steve, you read our... there's Matt.
His first appearance on the show.
Is this the first appearance? Yeah. He does not want to be seen.
No, he doesn't.
Matt is part of the witness. Oh, and there's Simon.
Here they come.
Oh, look at Simon. Hi, buddy. Aw, Simon knows I'm a vegan. Yeah. Hi, Simon.
Our ratings just went up now that we have an animal on the show.
Yeah, right. Everybody's like across the country going, you got to see.
Now you're
going
to get phone calls.
Yeah.
You got to see this podcast. It's got everything. Anti-authoritarian. They get picked apart in emails, and they have beautiful dogs. Hello, baby. What breed is Simon again?
Shorkie.
He's a Shorkie, which is a combination of a Yorkie and a
Shih Tzu.
Aw, you little mongrel. Look at you. All right. You better get him. He'll pull focus.
Yeah, we're getting upstaged by a dog.
Stevie, so we have one more ad left. You read it.
Suck start your acting career with Chatsworth Actors Guild. My favorite personal sponsor of the show. Not to insult the other sponsors of the show, but Chatsworth, get your CAG card. We know you filthy millennials.
Your SAG
love
card, right?
CAG.
Oh, CAG.
Chatsworth Actors Guild.
Sorry.
Your CAG
I'm
card.
Fucking up the ad.
He knows what he's doing. It was an accident, Chatsworth Actors Guild. He knows.
Sorry.
We know you filthy millennials love social media, and Chatsworth Actors Guild is now stooping to your level with a social media annex. With YouTube, Instagram, TV, Facebook, Ovision, and all the many ways you can show the world how well you can launch a ping pong ball or unwrap a star kissed with your anus, all the things kids love, with the guidance of CAG, Chatsworth Actors Guild, you can really hone your craft with our team of acting veterans. Our staff here have over... Our staff here have over 30 years of professional clitoral origami experience, and when it comes to stretching your anus around a GoPro, nowhere will you find a more dedicated team. Matt, I'm going to need you to scroll this fucker down. Yeah, I don't know what. So come on down to the abandoned Chipotle on 7th and Highland. Crawl under the overturned dumpster. Rummage around in the dark. When you find it, put your wallet into the provided Cupid doll head and hide it in a pile of wet ash. If accepted, in 14 to 16 weeks, a 1992 Ford Bronco will arrive at your house. And as soon as our instructors pull you inside the back, your face will be all over the media. Chatsworth Actors Guild is passionate about their students, so enroll today.
Mm,
get your CAG card.
That's good stuff,
that's
right?
That's very, very good. He did a great job.
Thank you, Howard.
Oh, yeah, hey, Steve is an old pro.
Yeah. Well, I got my CAG card back in 98.
You did?
Oh, yeah.
So Howard, so you worked with Rodney, and we were talking about some of the other comics. That there's a great book, too, about the history of comedy, Comedians, Drunk Thieves, and Scoundrels. It's really good if anyone wants to.
And there's another one, The Last Laugh by Phil Berger.
I read the Phil Berger book, yeah.
That was good. Yeah, that's good.
That's good. I like this one better.
I didn't read this. Yeah.
You'll love it. But they were talking about Jack Carter, another old school comic, you know. Who is some of the guys you
I wrote for Dick Capri.
Dick Capri is
he's very funny.
Like him because a lot of, you know, I was the younger generation then. Yes.
But I was
younger.
He opened for Engelbert, Tom Jones, I think, and Shirley
Humperdinck,
Bassett.
Funny man, Shirley underrated Bassett. Comedy.
Yeah.
Shirley Bassett.
See, those guys were opening for singers.
They were opening for singers.
They you know, they did very well. And when we were in the clubs, you know, like in Catch or, you know, Dangerfields, we didn't know, like, these guys were, you know, they were doing the Mountains and they were opening for Singers and they were doing very well. And they had money. They had a great career, you know.
I would like to open for some old schools. That'd be great if I could open for...
Now they have bands opening for bands.
I know.
If you could open for Mort Saul, that would be great.
Well, he's an old-time comic. Did you ever meet him?
Yeah.
I met him recently, not too long ago, taping something for UK TV, Skynet or something. It was called Set List, a really funny idea and great show created by Troy Conrad, Paul Provenza. And...
he's got the
He was on it, Mort Saul, and he's a legend, and he's like 80-something
now.
No,
he's 90, I think 91.
Mm. I've said this before, but I am, you know, before I get out of the business, I'm giving myself till 80 to make it in comedy, and then I'll teach. But Mort Saul, like, he's still hanging in there.
He's got my favorite joke. He goes, this album was so hip, every time you played it, the solo was different.
that's a hip reference.
Solo was different.
He was sort of one of the pioneers, Mort Saul, along with Lenny and
Gregory
and all of those guys.
Taylor,
Red Fox.
I'm just kidding.
Yeah. Was the epicenter New York City at that point?
Oh yeah,
yeah. My favorite all-time comedian, though, and it's a close call between him and George Carlin, is Richard Pryor. He's my
unbelievable
favorite all time, and I play the Comedy Store a bunch, and when I'm at the Comedy Store, it's always wild to think about who has been on that stage, and it's amazing, you know.
The story about Pryor that Rhett Rinaldo Ray told me was that Paul Mooney was his writer. Paul Mooney, you remember him?
Oh yes.
And Pryor was so bombed on stage that Mooney would write down what he was saying, and then when he sobered up the next day, Mooney would go to him and go, this is really funny.
You
should say this.
He was the transcriber.
No, he was hustling him. He was taking the notes.
Wow. And then is that true?
Because he knew he would black out and not remember anything. And he would take the notes and go to him and sell him the material, not knowing he had said it the night before. Those guys had an interesting relationship.
Yeah. That's awesome. Right.
So they had a show, Catskills on Broadway. Do you remember that?
Oh, yes, I do. Dick Lord was, or Capri was in it?
I think Freddie Roman.
Freddie Roman.
Dick Capri. I think, I forget who the other.
I don't know. I don't remember, but I remember that show.
So he did a couple of my jokes.
Oh, he did? That's
on
awesome.
On Broadway, so I could say, some of my jokes are on Broadway.
Yes, of course.
So that's...
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Willie Loman was based on me, Death of a Salesman. just me, Trace, been around Brooklyn going... Please buy this thing from me. Can I use your toilet?
What did Willie Loman sell? What was his?
Well, you know, I did a bit about the fact that because it's never mentioned in the play, I believe what it's never mentioned what Willie Loman sold. And by the way, I know a lot of you fucking people are like, why are they talking about Willie Loman? Who the fuck is Willie Loman? Death of a Salesman, how is that relevant? I'm so disgusted. So disgusted with you. But so I did a bit on Willie Loman. He comes out and he goes, and it's like the beginning of Death of a Salesman, which I saw on Broadway with Dustin Hoffman.
How was that?
No, I saw it on Broadway. It was with fucking Brian Dennehy as Willie and John Malkovich. As one of the sons. By the way, I see John Malkovich now doing commercials, and I'm just like, oh, Malkovich, you dipshit.
Did you ever see Woody Allen play jazz?
I never, ever did.
Because I used to live across the street from Michael's Pub
on
55th and 3rd, and you would see him.
Is he still doing it?
I think he does it somewhere else, but he would come out of the cab with the clarinet.
Yeah.
It was just, I mean, that's
New York.
Right? Can you imagine that here's this big star and he pulls and then he's, So I used to go in, and you know, I actually, so I got to talk to him.
You ever see him? No. You ever see Bobby Short at the Carlisle?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, he was famous.
No, I know. I mean, Alan put him in a bunch of his movies.
Yeah.
Great pianist who played the Carlisle Hotel. I never saw that either.
Who was he in the Woody movies?
He was a piano player at the Carlisle. He was in Manhattan. Probably a couple of others that I can't remember. Hunter and his sisters.
Oh, he was there for years.
I think it was Hunter and his sisters as well. Awesome shit. But Howard, I want to thank you for coming on.
We've reached
the end of our hour.
It was a good show.
Thank you, Steve. Thank you, Neil, for the email. Thank you, Tim, for the email. You could email me at epepitone@sbcglobal.net. Epepitone, E-P-E-P-I-T-O-N-E at sbcglobal.net. Rate us on iTunes, you morons. Subscribe on YouTube and like us on SoundCloud. When you like us, write a review, post a comment, or remember to add pep talks to your prayers. All right? When we collect, we get a gold star when you add us to your prayers. When we collect enough gold stars, we get a scratch and sniff sticker. With enough stickers, we get to stick our hand in the teacher's drawer for 3 seconds. Last week, I got a yo-yo. Steven got a pencil sharpener shaped like teeth. It was pretty awesome. To prove that we care, here are a few shout-outs to our friends. Sam Ordorf on YouTube says, quote, "As a geography master student, I can say Eddie knows his geography and he is right on about empire." That's right, that guy did say it. "Therapeutic and unlike every other podcast by Mike. 5 stars he rated us on iTunes. I know I don't have to write a review, but it's nice. This podcast speaks the truth. I enjoy this podcast for the friendship between its two hosts, its insight to Eddie's mind, and how it makes me feel a little less crazy and a little less lonely." So why can't you people write that
stuff?
Was
that a real review? That was great.
That was, right, Matt? That was. Wow. Yeah, that both of them were.
Yeah, that was.
Our engineers are Emma Erdbrink and Aaron Brungart, who's here today, and producer Matt Rasamoto, who writes the ads. Leave a message for us at 424-262-0904. Email me at the aforementioned address, epepitone@sbcglobal.net. Facebook me, facebook.com/PepitoneFans, and YouTube, PepitonePodcast.com. Howard, anything you want to promo or leave the kids with?
I'll be performing in Laughlin April 6th at the Avi Casino.
Is that right?
Yeah.
I find casinos scary, you know.
Really?
I performed at a casino once or twice, and both times they hated me. You know, because I was calling them gambling addicts.
Did you ever perform at a nudist resort?
I have.
You have?
Yeah. Maybe we should talk about that next podcast.
Now, you had a great show at the Culver City Comedy Club.
Yeah, Culver City Comedy. Yeah. That was awesome. Go down to Culver City. They're there every week.
You're
going to
be there every other week?
Every other week.
Something like that.
Yeah.
Any other shows you want to promo or anything?
No, I'll be sleeping in tomorrow. It's going to rain. So if you
can
catch me.
And I'm taping my special this Saturday. I'm going to Chicago. I'll be at the Lincoln Lodge. Google Lincoln Lodge in Chicago. I'm going to be there February 22nd and 23rd. I'm going to be in the Moon Tower Comedy Festival. I believe it's April 25th, but look up the schedule of Moon Tower. I'm going to be in Austin, Texas at the Moon Tower Comedy Festival. All right, Howard, again, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, and we'll see you next time on Pep Talks, everybody.